Middle of 236, Penelope is about to answer Odysseus why she's not welcoming him home yet. "My dear," answered Penelope, "I have no wish to set myself up, nor to depreciate you. But I am not struck by your appearance, for I very well remember what kind of a man you were when you set sail from Ithaca." What is she saying here?
You don't look the same.
But hello, it's been 20 years. I mean, you guys haven't even lived that long yet, but think of pictures you've seen of your parents that were taken 20 years ago. Yeah. We don't look exactly the
same. My dad had a ponytail.
I mean, dad had more hair.
Yeah.
My dad had a ponytail.
Okay. So basically 20 years can really age us, okay? So Penelope says she doesn't quite recognize him. Well, of course she doesn't. Of course he looks a little different. So now the test begins. "Nevertheless, Euryclea, take his bed outside the bedchamber that he himself built. Bring the bed outside this room and put bedding upon it with fleeces, good coverlets, and blankets." Penelope says, "Yeah, I don't quite recognize you. You're not sleeping in my room tonight." She tells Nurse Euryclea, "Drag his bed out to the hallway. He can sleep out there. You don't know it yet, but this is the test." She said this to try him, to test him. But Odysseus was very angry and replied, "Wife, I am much displeased at what you have just been saying. Who has been taking my bed from the place in which I left it? He must have found it a hard task, no matter how skilled a workman he was, unless some god came and helped him to shift it. There is no man living, however strong and in his prime, who could move this bed from its place, for it is a marvelous curiosity which I made with my very own hands. There was a young olive tree growing within the precincts of this house in full vigor and about as thick as a bearing post. I built my room around this with strong walls of stone and a roof to cover them. And I made the door strong and well-fitting. Then I cut off the top boughs of the olive tree and left the stump standing. This I dressed roughly from the root upward and then worked with carpenter's tools well and skillfully, straightening my work by drawing a line on the wood and making it into a bed prop. I then bored a hole down the middle and made it the center post of my bed, at which I worked till I had finished it, inlaying it with gold and silver. After this, I stretched a hide of crimson leather from one side of it to the other. So you see, I know all about it, and I desire to learn whether it is still there or whether anyone has been removing it by cutting down the olive tree at its roots." So can you picture this? It's really, I think it's a little tough to picture. There was a big tree growing in the middle of the property, and rather than cut down the tree, Odysseus built his house around the tree. And the tree grows right up through his bedroom. So rather than cut down the tree in his bedroom, he chopped the top of the tree and somehow used the tree to make the bed itself. In other words, can you drag the bed into the hallway?
No.
It's attached to the house. Yeah, I think so. So either it's like this super huge humongous tree and the bed somehow in the middle, or it's like a part of the headboard or something. But whatever it is, the tree is part of the bed and the bed is part of the tree. It's one and the same. So if he wasn't really Odysseus, would he know what his bed looked like? Of course not. So he'd be like, "All right, whatever, I'll sleep in the hall." He passes the test. When Penelope heard the sure proof Odysseus now gave her, she fairly broke down. She flew weeping to his side, flung her arms about his neck, and kissed him. "Do not be angry with me, Odysseus," she cried. "You who are the wisest of mankind, we have suffered both of us. Heaven has denied us the happiness of spending our youth together and of growing old together. Do not then be aggrieved or take it amiss that I did not embrace you thus as soon as I saw you. I have been shuddering all the time through fear that someone might come here and deceive me with a lying story, for there are many very wicked people going about. Zeus's daughter Helen would never have yielded herself to a man from a foreign country if she had known that the sons of the Achaeans would come after her and bring her back. Heaven put it in her heart to do wrong, and she gave no thought to that sin, which has been the source of all our sorrows. Now, however, that you have convinced me by showing that you know all about our bed, which no human being has ever seen but you and I, and a single maidservant, the daughter of Actor, who was given me by my father on my marriage and who keeps the doors of our room. Hard of belief though I have been, I can mistrust no longer. Then Odysseus in his turn melted and wept as he clasped his dear and faithful wife to his bosom. As the sight of land is welcome to men who are swimming towards the shore, when Poseidon has wrecked their ship with the fury of his winds and waves, a few alone can reach the land. And these, covered with brine, are thankful when they find themselves on firm ground and out of danger. Even so was Odysseus welcome to Penelope as she looked upon him. She could not tear her two fair arms from about his neck. Indeed, they would have gone on indulging their sorrow till rosy-fingered morn appeared, had not Athena determined otherwise, and held night back in the far west, while she would not suffer dawn to leave Oceanus, nor to yoke the two steeds, Lampus and Phaethon, that bear her onward to break the day upon mankind. Again, Athena loves Odysseus, so she makes this night super long, so that the two of them can have their reunion. At last, however, Odysseus said, "Wife, we have not yet reached the end of our troubles. I have an unknown amount of toil still to undergo. It is long and difficult, but I must go through with it. For thus the shade of Tiresias, remember good old Tiresias, prophesied concerning me on the day when I went down into Hades to ask about my return and that of my companions. But now let us go to bed, that we may lie down and enjoy the blessed boon of sleep." "You shall go to bed as soon as you please," replied Penelope, "now that the gods have sent you home to your own good house and to your country. But as heaven has put it in your mind to speak of it, tell me about the task that lies before you," topic 238. "I shall have to hear about it later, so it's better that I should be told at once." Odysseus kind of hinted that he had something else to do, and then he says, "But never mind, I'll tell you later." And of course she's like, "No, I want to know now." She's curious. "My dear," answered Odysseus, "why should you press me to tell you? Still, I will not conceal it from you, though you will not like it. I do not like it myself, for Tiresias bade me travel far and wide, carrying an oar, till I came to a country where the people have never even heard of the sea. They don't even mix salt with their food. They know nothing about ships nor oars that are as the wings of a ship. He gave me this certain token, which I will not hide from you. He said that a wayfarer should meet me and ask me whether it was a winnowing shovel that I had on my shoulder. On this, I was to fix my oar in the ground and sacrifice a ram, a bull, and a boar to Poseidon, after which I was to go home and offer hecatombs to all the gods in heaven, one after the other. As for myself, he said that death should come to me from the sea, and that my life should ebb away very gently when I was full of years and peace of mind, and my people should bless me. All this, he said, should surely come to pass." All right, so he's got a little task to do before he's finally home. He has to take an oar, like an oar from a ship, and he has to travel so far away from the sea, so far inland, that the people who live wherever he travels to have never even heard of the sea. They don't even know what salt is, because salt comes from salt water, right? Once he gets there, he's going to meet some old dude, and the old dude's going to say, "What's that on your shoulder? Is that a shovel?" "No, it's not a shovel, it's an oar." He's supposed to spear, like plant the oar in the ground, and then make sacrifices to Poseidon. Why? Remember, a lot of this trouble has been because Poseidon doesn't like him. Poseidon has been punishing him. If he does this, Poseidon will finally forgive him. So if he wants to live, like Tiresias said, to be a man who dies of old age very gently, very happily, he's got to do this first. And Penelope said, "If the gods are going to vouchsafe you a happier time in your old age, you may then hope to have some respite from misfortune." Thus did they converse. Meanwhile, Eurynome and the nurse took torches and made the bed ready with soft coverlets. As soon as they had laid them, the nurse went back into the house to go to her rest, leaving the bedchamber woman Eurynome to show Odysseus and Penelope to bed by torchlight. When she had conducted them to their room, she went back. And they then came joyfully to the rites of their own old bed. That means they cuddle. Telemachus, Philoetius, and the swineherd now left off dancing and made the women leave off also. They then laid themselves down to sleep in the cloisters. When Odysseus and Penelope had had their fill of love, and they fell talking with one another, she told him how much she had had to bear in seeing the house filled with a crowd of wicked suitors, who had killed so many sheep and oxen on her account, and had drunk so many casks of wine. Odysseus, in his turn, told her what he had suffered, and how much trouble he had himself given to other people. He told her everything, and she was so delighted to listen that she never went to sleep till he had ended his whole story. All right, pause there a second. Do you think he really told her everything?
No. I was about to say.
What do you think?
About the cuddling.
I told about the...
Well, you gotta wonder, does he kind of, like, gloss over the parts with Circe and Calypso?
Well, I think he probably would tell.
I don't know.
Cuddling.
It's a really tough question to answer. We can definitely learn this, because I'm about to read a little recap of what all he tells, and then you guys can decide how much he skims and how much detail he probably gave. We can definitely tell that the ancient Greeks had a huge double standard where men and women are concerned, right? Penelope is supposed to be faithful 100% for 20 years no matter what. But Odysseus?
Meh.
Yeah, they were goddesses. What can you do? Go have a couple kids, you crazy guy. Huge double standard, because he's still our hero despite not being faithful. It tells us a lot about things that the ancient Greeks valued. In other words, women had to be faithful. We also learned that the ancient Greeks probably valued youth and beauty, because what did Athena do to Odysseus at the end a couple paragraphs
ago? Beautiful.
She made him taller, she made him stronger, she made more hair grow on top of his head. So in that way, they're a lot like us, because I think a lot of times we tend to value youth and beauty.
Sounds like you can do it in different places.
Yes, it does. All right, so let's listen to what Odysseus tells her. Here's your little recap. Odysseus began with his victory over the Cicones, and how he thence reached the fertile land of the Lotus Eaters. He told her all about the Cyclops, and how he had punished him for having so ruthlessly eaten his brave comrades. How he then went on to Aeolus, who received him hospitably and furthered him on his way. But even so, he was not to reach home, for to his great grief, a hurricane carried him out to sea again. How he went on to the Laestrygonian city, Telepylos, where the people destroyed all his ships with their crews, save himself and his own ship only. Then he told of cunning Circe and her craft, and how he sailed to the chill house of Hades to consult the ghost of the Theban prophet Tiresias. And how he saw his old comrades in arms, and his mother who bore him and brought him up when he was a child. How he then heard the wondrous singing of the sirens, and went on to the wandering rocks, and terrible Charybdis and Scylla, whom no man had ever yet passed in safety. How his men then ate the cattle of the sun god, and how Zeus therefore struck the ship with his thunderbolts, so that all his men perished together, himself alone after being left alive. How at last he reached the Ogygian island and the nymph Calypso, who kept him there in a cave and fed him, and wanted him to marry her, in which case she intended making him immortal so that he should never grow old. But she could not persuade him to let her do so. And how after much suffering he had found his way to the Phaeacians, who had treated him as though he had been a god, and sent him back in a ship to his own country, after having given him gold, bronze, and raiment in great abundance. This was the last thing about which he told her, for here a deep sleep took hold upon him and eased the burden of his sorrows. So you can make your own judgments how many details he shared or how much he skimmed over certain parts. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me too. Then Athena bethought her of another matter. When she deemed that Odysseus had had both enough of his wife and of repose, she bade golden-throned Dawn rise out of Oceanus that she might shed light upon mankind. On this, Odysseus rose from his comfortable bed and said to Penelope, "Wife, we have both of us had our full share of troubles, you here in lamenting my absence, and I in being prevented from getting home, though I was longing all the time to do so. Now, however, that we have at last come together, take care of the property that is in the house. As for the sheep and goats which the wicked suitors have eaten, I will take many myself by force from other people, and I will compel the Achaeans to make good the rest till they have filled all my yards. I am now going to the wooded lands out in the country to see my father, who has so long been grieved on my account. And to yourself I will give these instructions, though you have little need of them. At sunrise it will at once get abroad that I have been killing the suitors. Go upstairs, therefore, and stay there with your women. See nobody, and ask no questions." So he's talking about all the sheep and all of the property. He does plan to get that back. He's going to go out to his people and take what they have. And then furthermore, he's going to make sure that they pay him back over time. In other words, he's kind of like going to tax them. So the suitors' families will have to pay for what their kids did. As he spoke, he girded on his armor. Then he roused Telemachus, Philoetius, and Eumaeus, and told them all to put on their armor also. This they did, and armed themselves. When they had done so, they opened the gates and sallied forth, Odysseus leading the way. It was now daylight, but Athena nevertheless concealed them in darkness and led them quickly out of the town. And that's the end. That's where we're done.